This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM in good old McLean and surrounding counties. And it has turned into a little bit of cooler weather this fall here, I guess, and we're finally into the fall now. Although I'm told that next week it's going to warm back up to 88 degrees. So we're going to be back up to summertime again, too. And we'll be looking back at the weekend here and probably thinking that, hey, that wasn't so bad after all, even though it's a little bit winterish out, I guess. But at any rate, I'm here with my wife, Lynn, and we're going to have a great show for you today. We're going to have a medley of things. We will talk a little bit about the hysteria, that I'm going to use that word to identify it, that's going on, and relate that back to some of the periods of hysteria that we've had in this country before, and I think that should be an interesting thing to talk about, and both of us will comment on that a little bit. I want to remind everybody out there that the show is brought to you by you. I shouldn't say just the show. Our station, Catholic Spirit Radio, is brought to you by you. And EWTN brought to you by you, and we need your help. And so anything that you can give, we would appreciate. If you'd like to make a donation, you can go to our website, and that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. You'll find out a lot about us and about our programs and the station itself and the people involved. There may be a place for you to be involved, so you can get information about that there. You can find out how to get our newsletter. And most important, you can find out how to make a donation because, again, we need your help if we're going to continue with this ministry. And it depends on us. It depends on EWTN. But most of all, it depends on you. So join in and help us out. But at any rate, as everyone knows, we are in a period here of very great division in our country. I think as Catholics and everybody else out there, we should all pray for our country. We need to return to some type of calm and humility amid this, what I would call hysteria that is going on, accusations flying back and forth from one party to another, from one cultural outlook to another, and it is getting, in my opinion, worse and worse and worse. And we're degenerating into what seems like almost a childish fight over things. And I don't think it's good for individuals, and I don't think it's good also for our country, our culture, or any of us. I want to comment a little bit about the history of this kind of thing going on into our country. Maybe that will help put it into perspective. And maybe we can talk about what could possibly be some of the deeper causes of this kind of thing happening. Is there anything before we start, Lynn, that you want to bring in on this?
No, I think best let's get started and I'll comment as we go along. There's so much to talk about.
Yes, there is.
And it seems like, you know, we set out with the idea in this programming that we're going to do one thing. But there's something comes up every week, and there's so many things that are going on right at the time to talk about. It really takes up our time, and it's good.
There's never a dearth of it, it seems like, anymore.
That's right.
And it seems like that these are important things to address. So we want to address it here from a local level and let our listeners on the local level here hear what we have to think. And I'm sure that you people out there have various things to think as well. But what I want to talk about a little bit to start with is I want to talk a little bit about something that happened very early in our country, and I think probably everyone has heard of them, the Salem Witch Trials. And there was an American playwright, Arthur Miller, that wrote a play called The Crucible, and I think he wrote that play either in the very late 1950s or sometime in the early 1960s. And that play was made into a television play, a television program later on during the 1980s. And the reason for that is there was a sort of similar hysteria going on in the 1980s that we're going to talk about. If you don't know anything about Arthur Miller, he was a famous American playwright. He wrote The Death of a Salesman, if anybody remembers that, one of his most important plays. He was married to Marilyn Monroe for a time, and so maybe a little bit of notoriety that way. And he wrote about the Salem hysteria in The Crucible. And again, that came out in the 1980s as a television production and was very, very popular at that time. So what's going on in our country and hysteria that is going on isn't anything new to this country. And my charge is that this is a Puritan country. It was founded by a lot of Puritans. And there has been a Puritan streak running through America, I think, ever since. And that Puritan streak, it seems, go in cycles of hysteria about one thing or another. We might have modernized them a little bit. We may think that somehow we have rejected Puritanism and that the Puritans were far away from us and that they were uptight, very prudish type of people, but that was not the case at all. And this country is not as far removed from them as it thinks. At an earlier time, we had another American writer, Nathaniel Hawthorne, and he wrote also stories not directly about the Salem witch trials, but they were based on his fascination with what happened at Salem. Now, Nathaniel Hawthorne, and that name spelled Hawthorne, was a descendant, I think maybe a grandson or great-grandson, I think great-grandson probably, of Judge Hawthorne, and that name was spelled Hathorn, and he was one of the judges who presided at the Salem witch trials, which resulted in the pressing to death, that was a means of execution back at that time, of a number of women who were identified as witches. And this was a hysteria, you know, that swept through the country. And I think that what happened later on in the 1980s and even more recently are variations of that same type of hysteria. And it can be directed at women. It can be directed at men. It's always directed at some type of a scapegoat. And I want to talk a little bit about what are the roots of that kind of thing and why is it does it seem to be so embedded in the maybe historical memory and the culture of this country. But Hawthorne was fascinated with the problem of evil, and he wrote a number of stories about it, short stories. He wrote one entitled Young Goodman Brown, and in which back at an earlier time, the setting is more or less at the time of when the Salem witch trials happened in New England. It's not about them at all, but it's about the early Puritan settlement in America and young Goodman Brown. Goodman was simply a term. Goodman and goody or goodwife. Goodman and goodwife were terms that were applied to men and women, meaning that they were, you know, upstanding citizens in the community. It'd be saying like gentleman today, using the word gentleman or something like that today. At any rate, young Goodman Brown is attracted to and attends a sort of satanic meeting, a meeting in which you know, the devil or Satan appears, and he's married to a very innocent type of woman, and her name is Faith. And when he goes, he is surprised to see many of the townspeople that he considered beyond this sort of thing. He's curious and just wants to go and find out what's going on, and thinks that doesn't realize that many of the people that he holds in esteem in the town show up also at this devil's meeting. And in fact, just about the whole village of Puritans are there. And at the very last out comes his own wife, Faith, and that, you know, of course, that name, and appears at this meeting of the devil. And young Goodman Brown realizes that everyone, including himself, including even his own wife, Faith, this wonderful woman that he's married to, who is so, you know, the, sort of like the flower of innocence and good and kind. All of us are tainted by this kind of thing. And he writes about original sin. And this is something, you know, a little bit more Catholic, really, that Hawthorne pursues here than it was Protestant. This idea, the Catholic idea of original sin, that is concupiscence, how it taints us all, how it all, in effect, makes us go downhill, and how our baptism removes this, but nevertheless, the effects of it still taint us, and if we don't choose to constantly apply ourselves to the good and to the teachings of the church, we begin to go downhill. And, of course, I'm not putting the church above this either, the Catholic Church, because Benedict himself said the smoke of Satan has entered the church, or maybe Paul VI was the one that said that, I'm not sure. But the fact is that that is the case. And so in this country especially, and in others too, Catholics have been affected just as much by this tendency of modernism and tendency of sin. Hawthorne also wrote another book called Ethan Brand, and I think it gets more to the type of belief in our country that I shouldn't seem to belief in our country, but belief that, you know, it, throughout our country. He wrote about a man who was searching to commit the unpardonable sin. This is what Ethan Brand does. He sets out on a journey to see if he can find what the worst sin in the world is, the most something that can never be pardoned, the unpardonable sin, and he wants to commit it. And so he sets out, and it becomes an obsession to find this. And he finds all he drifts into some of the most, you know, low and and despicable things, but never quite convinced that he's done something that's totally unpardonable. And he does this for his entire life. And during the time that he is doing this, he separates himself on this totally individualistic search for this unpardonable sin. And it is an individualistic search. He's on his own. And at the end, he realizes that his search itself has separated him from all the rest of humanity. He's always looking at humanity and finding every little sin that everybody commits and realizing that the sin he wants to commit is not that much greater than what they're doing. And so he's always, in effect, putting everybody down because of this tainted nature that they have, because they're not on this pedestal. They're not up in the city on the hill, the shining city on the hill, so to speak. And then he realizes that in separating himself totally from the rest of sinful humanity, that in itself has been the unpardonable sin, and he can't undo it, he can't unring the bell, and he can't get it back because he has left wife and children and society and father and mother and relations and his own society and all of mankind in this obsessive search for the unpardonable sin, and he realized it's the search itself and his separation from mankind is the unpardonable sin, and he throws himself into a lime kiln. You know, this is a furnace that they use burning logs to slake lime, you know, to burn lime and make it useful for all the various things that lime is used for, and it's a huge furnace. He throws himself into it, and of course, that's the representation of hell, that he's thrown into hell for what he's done, because at last, at the end of his life, he realizes that he's committed the unpardonable sin. And isn't that, in a way, a theme that runs through America? This idea of total individuality, this idea of the individual alone, this idea of me and Jesus, and this idea of being saved, this personal salvation. And it permeates the early Protestantism, and maybe it starts in Protestantism from the very beginning. And I'm not trying to blame everything on Protestantism here alone, because Protestants, of course, were a product of the Catholic Church itself, and so it permeates human beings. And this is what the church, the Catholic Church, and I've talked on this so much, was designed to avoid. I mean, this is why Christ gave us a church and not just a piece of paper or a Bible or an individual preacher. It gave us a church which is supposed to be a family and a community with a hierarchy and heads and so forth. And even a lot of that has been corrupted by this individualistic idea and this modernistic idea, this worldly idea, worldliness, and it has really permeated the American society of this total individual salvation, and it doesn't work. And I think a lot of what we're seeing today and what we've seen over and over again, the Salem witch trials, the hysteria that went on in Salem, the search for a scapegoat to blame, people unhappy with their own lives and trying to find this absolutely heaven on earth, the shining city on a hill. It's not here, folks. This is a material world that we're in, and material is defective, and we're defective, and we're tainted with sin. There is suffering in the world. We're not going to end it. It is always going to happen, and we need more than anything else the teaching, the true and real teaching of the Catholic Church to remind us of that and to show us the way to accept it and to meet it and to turn it in like Jesus Christ did into something that is a virtue that can rise above it itself, a gift, instead of this constant effort that we are going to build through all of these various things that we'll get to them, such as feminism or whatever the fad of the day is. Also, Hawthorne wrote a story about a birthmark. I don't know if that was the name of the story. I can't remember. I'm thinking of all this off the top of my head about this woman who had this one mark. She was a perfect woman. This man married her. He became obsessed with the fact that she had this birthmark, and he was a doctor, and he was going to find some way to remove it, and he finds these various elixirs, and finally he finds one that she takes, and it removes the stain. And in doing so, it kills his wife, his beautiful, beautiful, wonderful wife, in this attempt to remove original sin. Isn't this a lot of what's going on in this hysteria, this idea that somehow we are going to rebuild this world, each group, into its into this shining city on a hill? And, of course, this is never, ever going to happen. We're always tainted with that original sin. And in trying to absolutely get rid of it completely and become absolutely pure, in other words, Puritanism, instead, the man destroys all the goodness that is available. And so I'm going to stop here. We're going to take a break, and we're going to continue with this and show that this theme runs through our society and this effort to find this perfection always leads to disaster. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Catholic Spirit Radio would like to learn more about you, our listeners, so that we can better serve you through our broadcasts. You are invited to complete a short survey found on our website, CatholicSpiritRadio.com, or sent to you via email and Facebook. Survey participants may also enter a prize drawing to win one of two $50 gift certificates from the Dwelling Place in Normal. Thank you in advance for completing the Catholic Spirit Radio survey.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. We're back from our break. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're talking about some of the things that are going on in our society. Of course, what we're talking about is the Kavanaugh trial, really, and the sides taking up one side on one side and one side on the other, and the huge division that we have in our country. And I'm looking at some of the hysteria on the part of people, and a lot of times on both sides. I see more of it, in my opinion, on the what is called the left or the liberal side. I think this is a permanent, you know, liberalism itself. I'm talking about this Puritan streak that runs through our society. Liberalism itself is a secular representative of that streak, and it seems that it leads over and over again to periods of hysteria. I was talking about Hawthorne be a product, a descendant of the people at Salem, that where this kind of spirit degenerated into the Salem witch trials, in which innocent people were destroyed, some of them actually outright killed in a horrible way because of it. And I think we're seeing more of it today, and I'm going to go back and show that it keeps on cropping up over and over again. I might point out that Hawthorne was, in his time, at the Confederate Monument, I think it was in Atlanta, Georgia, where the Confederate Monument was unveiled, I think, in the 1870s. And Hawthorne was there for the commemoration and wrote about that as well. And now we see the attack on the Confederate monuments, as if somehow if we get rid of these Confederate monuments, it's the same thing as the doctor trying to get rid of the birthmark that stained his wife, and somehow we're going to root out all the evil and all of the fallen nature of our society, and then one way or another we'll have the city on the shining hill. I mean, we've had it throughout history, communism, socialism, libertarianism, liberalism, you name it. And there's all these isms and different movements and so forth that are always going to bring this great society, this wonderful society, this sinless society just around the corner, and it never happens. In fact, if you look at the history of the world, what really happens is the same thing that Hawthorne writes about, the destruction of society and people by this fruitless and absolutely useless pursuit. I want to talk about the Great Awakening we had in this country. This was another huge, full of a period full of enthusiasm, and all kinds of different religions sprang up, and each one was going to somehow or another change the country, bring us back to that original Christian spirit. In other words, that's another search that's been going on in America, this constant search for this pure, original Christianity. Isn't that what Puritanism is? The search for this pure, original Christianity that never existed from the very time that Christ founded the church. We had Judas, you know, who betrayed Christ himself. We had Peter, you know, who turned away from him before he came back. I mean, we had this understanding of Jesus Christ, that this world was a fallen world with a fallen nature, and he gave us the church, which also is an institution riddled with sin because the people that are in it and run it are sinners, and there's nobody above this. And it's not this idea that we're all sinners, therefore we can all approve of sin, but that seems to be what we're coming to also now. We had the Civil War itself, which seemed to be some kind of almost a religious war in a way. And it was started over slavery, of course, but there were other things that were involved. And then, you know, very quickly our country degenerated into people standing on one side and the other, and somehow or another this war itself was going to solve the problem. It didn't. In the 1980s, we had another craze that went on, and that was the repressed memory craze, and we're getting some of that again. I mean, this lady that can't remember where this incident that Kavanaugh is accused of took place and can't remember exactly when it took place, and we're hearing the same refrain that we heard about 30 years ago or 35 years ago. To a lot of people out there, I know that seems a long time. It doesn't seem that long to me. I was in my 40s when that happened, but we had this repressed memory craze in which all of these parents were accused by their children of sexual abuse, that they were being sexually abused by their parents, by the fathers especially, and there was no recourse. These people were accused and they were considered guilty because there was this idea of repressed memory. And you heard it taken for granted, and that's what I heard that was going on when I was watching this whole Kavanaugh thing. You saw all the psychological experts come out of the woodwork and say things like, it's quite common for people who have been sexually abused not to be able to remember, you know, the major incidents. They just remember, you know, the specifics surrounding. That is hogwash and absolute nonsense. And it was disproved in the 1980s, and here it is rearing its ugly head again. In the 1980s, lots of people suffered horror. I mean, some of them went to jail over crazy, fantastic accusations by kids who were coached along by supposedly child experts. You know, kids will go along with almost anything. They can tell what when they're given signals of what they're supposed to say and not say. And so they'll believe when they're led into believing that their memories have been repressed and so forth. And here, innocent parents were being accused of horrible crimes for which they had no recourse. Some of them went to jail over it. But their reputations were destroyed. Their families were destroyed. All of honest repression. Remember how it was stopped? It was stopped because at that time there were still a lot of Holocaust survivors. And many of them came forward. And they pointed out that their whole lives had been, some of them were kids when they were taken into some of these horrible German concentration camps and saw horrors that you wouldn't believe, that no child should ever see, and had horrors like that actually enacted upon them themselves. Many of them did not want to remember the things that happened to them. They tried to move on with their lives. Many of them admitted that their lives would never ever be the same again after those horrible things happened to them. And the harm and the hurt that was done. Nevertheless, they remembered. There wasn't one that came forward and did not remember everything that happened to them, when it happened to them, where it happened to them, and by whom it happened to them. This idea that there is this take-it-for-granted repressed memory is simply not so. Now, you can forget something after 36 years. Details and so forth get scarce. But it isn't common that people who have, you know, traumatic incidents somehow or another have their memories repressed. And here it comes again, the same thing, and we're getting it, and this hysteria. And it crops up in this country all the time. And always there's going to be this huge new millennium, and we get this a lot from the left here. They are going to build this whole new society in which women won't be repressed. The same thing with racism, that all of this is somehow going to be taken care of and it's going to go away and it won't be repressed. And if only they can have their way, if only this and only that. And there's always scapegoats. And then now the scapegoat seems to be white males or the white paternity or something else. And then the blame will come and the screaming and the yelling and the hysteria, the same as on the Salem witch trials, the same that happened during the 1980s. That happened, and it comes and it goes, and the world is still the same. I'm trying to think of the poet that was a W.H. Auden who wrote a poem to that, you know, about the fact that he too had been to Scarborough Fair and drank the beer and everything else and cheered and had a good time and all that. But when he finally passed out and woke up again in the morning, his clothes were wet. And the world was still the same world yet. So these waves of revival and waves of somehow or another renewal and waves of reformation that constantly take place and revolution or whatever that constantly is going to take place, we have been obsessed with revolution ever since our own American Revolution. A revolution is usually a thing that really doesn't ever solve anything, including our own American Revolution. It didn't solve all of the problems of human nature, and you shouldn't be even expected to. We do have a country. We ought to try to make the best of it that we were given. But it isn't some kind of event that is going to change the whole world and make it into something that is going to be a pristine place to live. It just isn't going to happen. Then we had here not too long ago, for those people that are young, you should be able to remember just a few short years ago, I think, five or even less, we were at the height of the end times, if you want to call it scare or fad or whatever, revival. We were all living in the end times. And I remember so many different Protestants and so forth. The end times were just around the corner. I mean, people were out buying all kinds of survival food and everything else, not because it's a smart idea to be ready in case there are emergencies and so forth. That is a good idea. But they were buying all of this stuff because the end times were coming and we were going into the millennium. I mean, this is something, a belief that didn't even exist for 1,700 years. It was only thought up about 150 years ago by somebody who interpreted the Bible that way, and you have to twist it and torture it even to come up with this idea of the so-called end times and, you know, the third that Jesus is going to come back secretly in the rapture. You know, we're going to be raptured out of this, the end time. The good people will be raptured out of the end times and won't have to suffer. It's always this avoidance of suffering. This somehow or another, we can avoid suffering and we can build a society in which suffering will be end. The fact is the church teaches us that suffering is part of life and that it should be offered up to God as a sacrifice because Jesus Christ was a sacrifice. I mean, the whole teaching of the church is what is the solution to this kind of thing. And many of us in the church itself, many of our own bishops and our own priests and so forth in the church also have been, you know, captured by this Americanism, modernism, whatever you want to call it, this idea of building this city on a hill and moving away from the traditional dogmatic teaching of the church. Christ gave us a church, and it's through the church that we will reach our salvation, and it will not be some rapture or it will not be some kind of movement, feminism or some other movement that will save us. So that's what I'm, you know, talking about. We have these accusations of Kavanaugh being some kind of Jekyll and Hyde. That was another story written by Robert Louis Stevenson. He wasn't an American, but he was an Englishman, and he was a product of this Protestant, you know, type of thinking. Again, I'm not trying to blame Protestants when I bring this in, but it is a theme that runs throughout revolution. And Martin Luther revolted against the church. Everything always needs to be reformed. I mean, that goes without saying. Every single human being needs to reform himself. Always. It's a constant process. You know, it never stops until death. There's never any this state of all of a sudden I'm saved and I'm going to be saved and I can't be unsaved. That's not true. It's not biblical either. And it pops through Protestantism, and it pops through Americanism, and it pops through modernism, and it doesn't work. I mean, and now we have Kavanaugh being made out some Jekyll Hyde. Somehow or another, he's a young kid raised up as a decent person by a decent family, decent Catholics. He goes out and drinks a little bit, which kids do, and he gets drunk, and maybe he got sick. You know, I mean, that happened to me when I was a kid. I'm sure it happens to a lot of people, and he probably went to sleep somewhere. So all of a sudden now it's when he wakes up or while he's in a drunken stupor, he goes out and he gets involved in some kind of rape cult and becomes a rape machine. You know, the Jekyll Hyde. That one minute he's this good, you know, Mr. Jekyll, Dr. Jekyll, and the next minute he's this horrible, evil, you know, Mr. Hyde. You know, these things are, and again, Wasn't this Robert Louis Stevenson writing about the same thing that Hawthorne was writing about? This idea we're going to find some kind of an elixir to make us good, to remove the evil stain? Well, we're not. And it's not going to happen by simply, you know, we get too much of this me and Jesus, you know, this personal relationship with Jesus. All we have to do is take Jesus as our Savior. We're getting this in the Catholic Church. We're getting too much of it. You know, this all we have to do is bring somebody to Jesus. No, we have to work out our salvation with fear and trembling, like St. Paul said, and through the doctrine, at least for Catholics, and dogmatic teaching of the church, which we have gotten away from so much. So we're going to finish up here in this segment with this, and then Lynn and I are going to talk about, you know, these things. So there's another one that, again, this constant fascination with the end times that has gone up on right up until now. There's always this millennialism that runs through America and runs through modernism. Now, maybe it exists in the rest of the world as well more, but it really found its height, I think, in this country. And we got obsessed with from one hysteria to the other. If we look back at Martin Luther, again, you see that Martin Luther was obsessed with the devil. He was obsessed with bodily functions. We're obsessed with sex. I mean, the idea that the Puritans were prudish is utter nonsense. Go look at their society sometime and read. They were obsessed with sex. America has been obsessed with sex. And it's a sick obsession. I mean, people do many more things than simply engage in sex, but that seems to be one of the huge focuses of modernism. So Modernism is very, very Puritan. We're obsessed with cleansing and purifying. I mean, the church has always taught about purgatory, that we will be cleansed before we're fit to be in heaven. But it has a doctrine for that. We're also obsessed with earthly salvation. And so what I'm saying is Puritanism, Americanism, modernism, the whole liberalism, and when I'm talking about liberalism here, I'm talking about the philosophical liberalism that especially was enshrined in the 18th century by the 18th century philosophes, and which was imitated and put into play by the founders of this country. This modernism, this Puritanism, this, you know, obsession with the city on a hill has run through this country, and it's still doing it again, and it keeps on cropping up all the time. And the best thing that we can do as Catholics is to return to the dogmas of our church, to step back and understand that there is suffering in this world, and there always will be. There isn't any panacea for it, and that the transformation or reformation of ourselves means, in effect, sometimes putting on the sackcloth and ashes, recognizing the fact that we're flawed, that this is a defective world made out of matter and it couldn't be otherwise, that God himself could not have made us like himself, because if he did, we would be himself. There's only one God. I've talked about that before. And I want to go into very quickly, when we come back after this coming break, a little bit about what John Henry Newman said, and then Lynn and I will spend the rest of that last segment talking about the fallout and maybe the solutions to some of this kind of thing that is going on. But liberalism, you know, we have this. I'll get back to that when we come back from our break. So we're going to go ahead and take a break now. And stay with us. I hope you find this interesting. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Are you a mother, father, or grandparent who has suffered the loss of abortion in your family? Start your healing journey today by attending a Rachel's Vineyard retreat in the Peoria area. Registrations are being accepted for the weekend of October 12th through 14th. Rachel's Vineyard is a safe place to rebuild hearts broken by abortion. Call 309-264-1489 or find more information at rachelsvineyard.org. All communication is confidential.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic. We're back from our break. We're talking about some of the goings-on concerning the Kavanaugh nomination, the huge division that we have in our country, the name-calling, and it seems like hatred going on back and forth from whatever you want to name, liberal to conservative, Republican to Democrat. There is this polarization of our country. We've been divided probably more so than any other time since the Civil War, and it seems like a theme running through this division is always this constant Puritan streak of reform and revolution. And somehow or another, we're going to build a city on the hill. If only we could have X, Y, and Z. It's always something different every time. But boy, this time we have the absolute solution. And of course, we never do. And again, as I pointed out, some of our greatest writers have shown what happens when you think that you can somehow purify everything and get rid of sin. And maybe pretend that it doesn't exist and demand that if only I get my way and if only we have this particular model, that somehow we're going to have the millennium at hand. Here's what John Henry Newman had to say, and he talked about this Protestant streak. He was a Anglican in England who became Catholic, and he was talking to his former Protestant friends and consistency, and maybe the Anglicans especially. And he says that Protestantism has no real place to rest. He says it has to either get thinner and thinner and thinner and move down into some kind of spiritualism, and that's what we're getting in a lot of it today, and away from true Christianity. And I am not exempting Catholics from this. Most Catholics, I'm seeing many, many, many believe along these same lines. He says here, it seems to me that you, meaning Protestants, odd inconsistency to believe less than you do or more than you do. If you confine yourself to what is contained in Scripture, then the content of your belief will be thin and even incoherent, and you will have no rationale for giving the Bible the supreme position. And isn't that what we are degenerating to in our secular culture? And isn't that what liberalism is degenerating into? Something that is thin and even incoherent and having, you know, no rationale, really? It says, what you do inconsistently believe is a warrant for your going further and adopting as your criterion the tradition of the first few centuries, that is, of the Catholic Church, and using this tradition embodied in the formularies of the Church as that in the light of which Scripture is to be read and understood. And he finally says, you must either move upwards into Catholicism or downwards into unbelief. There is no midway point of rest. And I'm going to charge that that's the same thing for Catholics. Either Catholics have got to move upward into the full teaching and dogmas of their church, or they're going to move downward into unbelief, and there's no point of rest. And it's the same thing with liberalism. Liberalism either moves up into the basic tenets of Catholicism that built Western civilization, or it moves down further and further away until it becomes incoherent and really has nothing to say except hysteria. And that seems to be what's going on. And I'm going to stop there and then let you comment on that, Lynn.
Well, in my opinion, my humble opinion, it seems to me that everybody is getting hysterical and has rehappened over and over and over again throughout, if you want to just take the Bible, throughout all of human existence. And ever since they were ejected from the Garden of Eden, they're searching for that. And they think there's this panacea in the Garden of Eden. They have forget the original sin part. And they're searching for the wrong thing. They need to be acknowledged sin in man's what's the word I can never say?
Concupiscence.
Concupiscence. And, you know, there was left, a stain that was left from this first sin. And you see it today in everything going on around us almost. The girls, women screaming at the senator in the elevator, Senator Flake, screaming and yelling at him, and they're all, you see that quite often about anything. People out in the streets screaming and yelling and carrying on. Why? What do they think they're going to gain?
And the women screaming and yelling at Cruz in that restaurant.
His wife.
Mm-hmm. And it's on the other side, too. I was watching Fox last night. I was watching Hannity and others, and they go on and on. Is that the panacea is if only we could get back to the founding of this country, if only we could get back to the Constitution, if only we could get back to the Declaration of Independence. But I have charged before that a lot of those things have led us here, right to where we're at, this idea that somehow or another – that we founded some kind of a city on a hill, some kind of a country beyond
a pure country.
Yeah, a pure country. And somehow if we can just get back to we'll purify it in that way. We'll purify it on the conservative side. We'll have a political solution. We'll have a solution in a piece of paper. We'll have a solution in the Declaration of Independence. We'll have a solution in the Constitution. We'll have a solution in the Bible. If only we read all these documents and wave them around like magic amulets, somehow or another, all the evil will go away.
No, it won't. What man needs to do is to realize that he is the fallen nature, and it's a struggle. This life, each life is a journey and a struggle to God. And if you work on that, you can see things more clearly.
And my opinion is that some of this hysteria and some of this hatred is driven by people who have, and I wanted to get into the natural law today, we're probably not going to make it, but people who understand, who are unhappy internally with the fact that they are deviating from the natural law. They're not, you know, living in accordance.
Yes, and they don't know it.
They're not living in accordance with their own nature, which Augustine, ultimately our own nature is, we're religious, is to rest in God and worship God, and in Him we live and move and have our being. And Augustine said that, you know, our hearts are restless until we rest in You. And so they constantly are angry and blame because they deny that their rejection of all those things is causing their unhappiness. And if only the whole world would agree with them and pronounce what they are doing is correct and good, they all would be well and everyone would be happy. Well, it won't happen.
No, it won't. But we're talking in very general terms. And this is happening all over the world, not the United States. But what has happened in the world? They have become too materialistic. They don't believe in God anymore. They don't have the Ten Commandments to guide them. So what do you have left? They're searching for something that they won't acknowledge. I think that's a big problem. And then you look at, let's just go back to our politics and so forth in this country. This whole thing over this testimony of this woman that can't remember much because of supposedly post-trauma, delirium or whatever.
Post-traumatic stress disorder, yeah. Or whatever. But
how is it that soldiers all go through terrible things and they have that and they can remember? And that's what upsets them, what makes them anxious.
I believe, of course, you know, I don't want to get into that too much, but I believe, of course, something did happen to that woman. I don't know what it was. But
I agree.
But the fact is that this idea that somehow Kavanaugh must have done it, and maybe she can't remember certain details, I find that a little shaky, too. I don't really want to get into it. That's my particular opinion. I want to get back again to this hysteria, though it is this liberal movement, you know, what we call, when I say liberalism, there's a broad, overreaching philosophical liberalism that was enshrined during the Enlightenment and by our own founders. Within that liberalism, there has been this more specific liberal streak that we call liberalism that is a little bit different from that. It's political. It's strictly materialistic, although liberalism itself is materialistic. And that has been failing. And all of the great things that were supposed to come from it haven't panned out. You know, it's like I say, it's like Auden when he wrote, you know, you wake up after Scarborough Fair, after drinking and carousing and so forth, and your clothes are wet, and it's still the same world yet. And that's what happens. And there are many people that are not going to let that dream die, and so they blame people who criticize it or disagree with it or go a different way, somehow or another, as destroying not just this dream that they have, but destroying this great city on the hill that they were going to build. And then they have their own emptiness of soul, because a lot of these particular pathways don't lead to the happiness they expected. And so they find scapegoats. And that seems to be a pattern over and over and over in our country. And again, I'm not trying to put my finger on and blame Protestant Catholics. Are just so many of them are just as much, you know, the same way, taken in by this worldliness and this worldly idea. And it's not going to solve anything. It's just divides people. And it takes away from the understanding that there is suffering in this world, and some of it is very tragic indeed, and it goes deeply into human nature. And the best thing that we can do is all of us hang together and understand this and do the best we can to comfort each other and to have a humility that we're all sinners, not in the sense of modern, this modern idea of, oh, we're all sinners, meaning that that gives us, you're okay, I'm okay, we're all sinners, so that gives us an excuse to do whatever we want. No, we're all sinners deeply in the same way that Arthur Miller tries to get at, that one of our great writers, Nathaniel Hawthorne, tries to get at. We need to return to the great literature that has been produced in both, Europe and in the United States, into those deep, deep themes again, instead of the superficial stuff that passes for it today. A lot of kids don't even know what these works are anymore and how important they are to understand and read. And they don't know where they came from, where they're going. There's a lot of lostness in this country, and I think that leads to a lot of it too, Lynn.
Well, I thought we were going to talk more about the politics and the Kavanaugh thing.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I guess I
just misunderstood what the point was.
I just don't want to try and decide whether, in a particular...
I don't want to decide anybody's particular case, thing, but I want to point out that, look at it, they are using people to gain their political whatever, both sides are. And they've just about destroyed the judge, and now I hear today that someone suggested he can't coach his daughter's volleyball team or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, because until these charges are cleared. What charges? He hasn't even been charged with anything.
No, there are no... I agree with that. I mean, they are destroying him. They destroyed... I would have to agree with you on that. They're destroying Judge Kavanaugh on the basis of no evidence at all.
That's
just
right.
Just an allegation, an accusation.
Which is totally against
our
Constitution. But they don't care. And who is it that's doing it? It's Feinstein in that letter. She was not supposed to release it, but somehow magically it got released.
Yes, it did.
They're destroying Christine, too, the woman. They're destroying her.
And these
She's
things,
fragile. Something did happen to her in the past. We don't know what. But to use a person that way is, I think, a sin.
And this is being driven because of the type of government we have, of representatives having constituencies. And if the constituency goes mad and the constituency becomes hysterical and the constituency insists, then in order to get elected, the representatives of that constituency have to go along with it. And that's what we're seeing.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what we're seeing. They're just crumbling to, they use humans. They're being used for what?
Well, the
I think it's evil in this world.
It is. I mean, ultimately, we have to get down to that because this is a religious program, and ultimately, this is diabolical. It goes right back down to, the very...
to the Garden of Eden, and they're still looking for that panacea.
The fall. It goes back to the fall, and this hysteria and absolute mean... hatred and so forth comes from this idea that somehow or another, this great dream of making this time, with the specific liberalism, modernism of our day, that somehow or another, this dream is being destroyed and taken away and the world would be wonderful and great if only it could be enacted. But the people standing in the way are, you name it. The Republicans or the religious people or the traditionalists or anybody who happens to be in the way of that dream. And so this is what drives it. And our politicians on both sides get driven by a constituency
of hysteria.
Of hysteria that is divorced from the trueness of Christianity and in its fullness. And a lot of that does go back to this what Newman says. This thinness and this inability of Protestantism to stand anywhere. It has to either sink or it has to come back with the Catholicism. It can't stand in the middle. There's no foundation there. And there's no foundation for our country when that happens either. That may be hard to say, but I am not blaming one group of people. There are Catholics who contribute to it, and even Catholics and bishops and priests in the church that do as much as anybody else.
That's right. You've got to come back to God. How do people think that killing all these babies before they're born and as they're being born, that God is going to overlook this?
And isn't this what this whole thing turns on, is abortion? Because they're afraid that Kavanaugh is going to somehow or another end abortion and end killing 60 million. It turns on this. I mean, talk about diabolical and Satanism. I did want to get into that, and we had so much to talk about that we didn't get into it. But yes, that is exactly, it hinges on this issue. It hinges on abortion. And, and you know, divine justice is enacted and wreaked upon people, it isn't because God does it. It's because if people follow the wrong path,
they bring it on themselves.
They bring it down upon themselves. You know, this will happen to you. And we bring it down upon ourselves. It's time to step back and to take a deep breath and to start looking inward and realizing there isn't any city on the hill in America or anywhere else, and there never will be. And you're not going to have this wonderful dream. No matter what you think is going to bring the millennium, it won't do it.
And you're sure not going to get it by destroying people. And what they're doing is plain evil.
And you don't have to have some huge doom around the corner such as the end times or anything else. All you have to have is what's going on right now, and it will destroy you right where you're at by yourself, individually, on your whole individual basis. So we're going to have to end with that right here. We're getting down to the end. So think about what we talked about, but we're going to say our St. Michael prayer, and we need it more than ever. St. Michael, the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, Prince of the heavenly host, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. Amen.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com. Or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.